In today's episode of the Leadersmith Podcast, we're going to be talking about humility and leadership. And we're going to be specifically asking, why are humble leaders so rare? Stay tuned.
In a world of incompetent bosses, micromanagers, and petty tyrants, one management professor claims that he can help you become the kind of leader that you would want to follow. You are listening to The Leadersmith. Now, here is your host, Darren Gurdis.
Okay, so today I'm going to be going over an article in Forbes. It was written on June 29th, 2020. The title is Why Humble Leaders Are Rare. And the author starts out by saying, look, in theory, a humble leader seems like a great idea. But then as we start to think about this, why is it that we elect Donald Trump instead of Ben Carson? I mean, if we really thought that humility was a great thing, we would have elected Carson, not Trump. And before Democrats, before you start laughing, you put up Hillary in that same election, who is not noted to be terribly humble, and Joe Biden, who's been lusting after being the president for the last at least 40 years. So it cuts both ways. But so he says that few people would contest the idea that humility is desirable. Sure. I mean, we all think that humility is a good idea. Yet, if he says, if you ask the same individuals to name a famous leader, their choices will likely reflect the reverse. Things like arrogance and self-importance, not humility or lowliness or thinking better of others. So he goes on to say this, quote, scientific research shows that humble leaders are more likely to create a healthier and more effective organizational culture, to develop employees' potential, as well as to coach and mentor them and boost team morale, job satisfaction, and performance. All those things are true. I've seen all of these things in the academic literature. Let's take them one at a time. Healthier and more effective organizational cultures. Why would a humble leader do that? Because he's empowering. By nature, he's going to try to support you and help you become better. Second, to develop employees' potential, focus on growth. When you're humble, when it doesn't have to be all about you, you can help other people shine, as well as coach and mentor them because you think that growth is important, right? And then to boost team morale, if you're doing these things, morale comes as a side effect, and job satisfaction and performance, all functions of being led by somebody who, it doesn't have to always be about them. They care about you. They're focused on you. They're trying to help you and others within the organization grow. So by all scientific academic studies, humble leaders make better leaders. But there's also one other benefit. There's also fewer negative things that come out of this, negative side effects, counterproductive work behaviors, deviant behaviors, unethical. Like if your boss is unethical, organizations, people in those organizations are more likely to be unethical if the boss is, or if the boss is corrupt, they're likely to look at his lead and become more corrupt themselves. So all those things go away as well. So why don't we hire more humble leaders? He says this, quote, employees are largely aware of the benefits of having a humble leader, as are voters. Humility enables leaders to understand their own limitations, take into account others' opinions, acknowledge their own mistakes, and be sufficiently self-critical to attempt to change and get better, making humility a key ingredient of coachability. Now, leaders who lack humility make mistakes that they shouldn't have made, because they don't get the information from people, because they're cutting themselves off from information, because their arrogance precludes people from helping or precludes them from hearing. So they blame others. They're out of touch with reality. They have yes men. They have a whole host of very predictable problems if they're not humble. So the author asked the question, why wouldn't we hire more humble leaders? And he said this, quote, while we tend to value humility, we are seduced more by other qualities such as confidence, charisma, and arrogance that are inversely correlated with humility. Now, notice what he listed. Confidence, it's not a bad thing to have, but overconfidence is a problem. Charisma, sometimes we think that charisma is the height of leadership. It's not. Charisma can cut both ways, and even Drucker talks about it as more of a negative thing than a positive thing. And then arrogance. So arrogance is like the opposite of humility. We don't want that. It's never going to work well for us. So he talks about five critical pitfalls here. The first is this. One, we mistake confidence for competence. There's a big difference between confidence, being confident, and being competent, able to do the work. And he says this, quote, "This is why overconfidence is far more common in leaders than humility. And because of the overlap between confidence and competence is just 9%. Now, I don't know where he gets the figure, but that's pretty amazing. The overlap between confidence and competence is just 9%. When our main criterion for appointing leaders is how good they think they are, we will inevitably end up with lots of leaders who are not very good, except in their own mind." So that's a really interesting point, because we tell leaders as they grow up messages. I mean, even Disney, have faith in yourself, or believe, be you, right? And in business, it's things like believe in yourself. If you think you're great, you are. Be confident. And all these kind of messages are focusing leaders on creating this image of self-importance and confidence, and I can do it. And it's, but it's more impression management than it is anything else. Okay, he continues, "There may be some who fake arrogance or external confidence while being internally modest or at least self-critical. But for each such person, we will attract 10 who are just as deluded about their talents, and coaching them to be humble will be hard." Okay, so it's, I mean, it what we're looking for is one thing, and we're getting another. Like, we say that we want humility, but we really don't want humility. We want this confident guy who's going to be clear to lead us. Okay, number two, he says we are blinded by charisma. And I've talked about charisma on other programs, and I almost exclusively talk about charisma negatively, because it's not the magic bullet that people think it is. He says this, quote, "When it comes to leadership, all style and no substance will get you further than no style and all substance." But that's not the end of it, right? I mean, you can't just stop there. Yes, you have to have, it's good to have style. Style will help, but the substance is what matters. He says this, quote, "We gravitate toward entertaining showmen, yes, usually men, who are fearlessly charming in high-stakes settings, like political debates or in-person job interviews, and socially skilled to the point of violating conventional etiquette, and intimidate opponents. The problem is not that we find this enchanting, but that we equate it to leadership talent." That does not mean that that's leadership, but we somehow, it's kind of like when you look at somebody and think, well, he must be a leader. Look at him. He's big and strong and strapping, big chin with a dimple in it, or whatever it is. I mean, we look at people and think that there's something when they're not necessarily so. He goes on a little bit further. He says, "Charisma can mask psychopathic and narcissistic tendencies. This does not mean that charisma is toxic per se. Rather, it's an amplifier, making competent leaders better and incompetent leaders more destructive. When a leader is smart, ethical, and pro-social, you want them to be as charismatic as possible so that they can leave a strong positive impact on their followers. But when a leader is inept or corrupt, you should really hope that they have as little charisma as possible." Like, that reminds me of a Warren Buffett statement. He says, somebody once said that in looking for people to hire, you look for three qualities: integrity, intelligence, and energy. And if you don't have the first, the other two will kill you. You think about it, it's true. If you hire somebody without integrity, you really want them to be dumb and lazy. I mean, that's kind of what he's talking about here with the charisma. Charisma looks like it's something significant. It really isn't, or most of the time it isn't. Okay, number three, we are too lazy to evaluate talent. And this is what I was talking about before, where we said we look at this, like we look at these external traits, but those external traits don't really mean much. So we look at internal skills and intellectual skills and qualifications, but it's hard to determine what is really good leadership and what is not. Because you can put on paper, you can make yourself look like you've succeeded just by leaving certain facts out. And so, and this happens all the time. People say, well, I brought the company from 300 to 6,000. Well, yeah, you bankrupted it in the process, and you undermined, and you were a terrible leader that everybody hated it, but you didn't say that on paper. Okay, so he says this, try this. Ask people to tell you who, in their view, was the best president or prime minister of their country, followed by a request to produce some data to back up their choice. You will see that A, most people struggle to provide rational evidence, based justification for their choices, and B, you will need some help from Wikipedia to assess their claims. The business world is not much different. It includes many former CEOs who became highly successful leadership gurus after a failed career, and many talented leaders who never received the credit they deserve. So the humble ones aren't out blowing their horns. It's the not humble ones, the arrogant ones, the overly self-confident ones who are out there touting what they shouldn't necessarily be touting, because they shouldn't really be blowing their horn if they didn't have as great success as they are trying to make it look like they had. Okay, next, we equate arrogance to strength. Now, this is actually a legitimate thing that we do all the time. We think, wow, that person, and there are studies like this. I talk about this from Pfeffer's book that I use in my Power and Influence class. Like, when somebody's angry, we give them like higher marks for being competent. It's bizarre, but anger somehow leads to what? Okay, so same thing here. We equate arrogance to strength. If somebody sees themselves as self-important or self-worthy, we assume that they're competent, where that's just confidence, and strong is not the same as competent. So we confuse ourselves in the process. We have a double standard in our society, where if a man does it, we think he's competent, and if a woman does it, we think she's a shrew, right? We're repelled by it when it's a woman. He goes on to say this: this suggests that we are more likely to screen out incompetence and imposters among female than male leadership candidates. Isn't that interesting, right? So because we're using the wrong criteria, we're screening out the wrong thing, and it's creating more of a gender gap. Now, if you know me, I'm not one to be going, oh, but equality this and equity that. I'm not. But this is a legitimate thing, and we have to recognize that that's legitimate. His last point is this: we perceive humility as a feminine attribute, and that's unfortunate. It's not necessarily just bound to women, and so if we skew this in our minds, we're going to create a problem with this. He says this, and when men display humility, we assume that they're too feminine to be in charge. Perhaps they don't even want it in the first place, right? Now, women, if they do this, they're, you know, stereotypical masculine traits. Oh, she's not, you know, feminine enough. They have a really difficult balancing act. But if men go the other direction, we assume the opposite. That's just a cultural thing that we do, but it gets in the way of finding humble leaders. Okay. It says this: imagine if our typical career advice for someone who is interested in becoming a leader was, quote, let others take credit for your own hard work. Don't talk about your talents or achievement. Don't talk, just listen. Or focus on making others look good. Well, they wouldn't get to the place where they're at the top. Now, that's the argument that he makes. Now, I'm going to argue against that a little bit. You can be what Collins talked about in a level 5 leader, a real mix of will and humility. And if you do that, you can get to the top, but it's going to be harder to thread that needle if you are being humble. Now, your people are going to love you, but people above you or people that would otherwise hire you might not see that aggressive drive that they think that they need. But again, we might be looking at the wrong thing. So he concludes with this. He says, focus less on confidence and more on competence. Good advice. 2, de-emphasize the importance of charisma. I've been saying that for years. 3, develop the right expertise and make the effort to evaluate people's actual rather than self-perceived talent. 4, understand that arrogance is only strength if we're intimidated by it. 5, and accept the 21st century reality that the essence of leadership is not hyper-masculine, not that it ever was. Okay, so that's a pretty good article. I would end with this, the quotation for contemplation. It comes from St. Augustine. Quote, do you wish to rise? Begin by descending. You plan a tower that will pierce the clouds? Lay the first foundation of humility. Again, that's St. Augustine. Hey, that's all that I have for this episode of the Leadersmith Podcast. I hope that helps you become the kind of leader that you would want to follow.